Blog Talk Radio.
And Don Show. I'm Don Allen over here in Studio A, and over in Studio B is Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Don, I can't complain. the mild month of January, I mean, just a year ago tonight here in our beloved Twin Cities, we had a wind chill of about 29 degrees below zero, temperature about zero and a half. I mean, you know, we are blessed. I mean, we could be out in Washington D.C. with the power brokers of our beloved NAACP. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah.
Don, I understand we have an outstanding program tonight. Let me also do this right at the top. I've talked to friends and supporters of the besieged and beleaguered African American community in Albert Lea, Minnesota. We send them our prayers and best wishes for their continued safety there. That situation is at a dangerous level. I must report, Don, that the NAACP State Conference in Rochester, the State Human Rights Department and Council of Black Minnesotans have all declined to be of assistance in that city at this particular hour. So we just want to send our prayers to a besieged community. I had a chance to speak to former NAACP President Leola Seals this afternoon, and she sends her best wishes to all and to our friends in Duluth. But she is praying for her grandson and her daughter and their friends in Albert Lea as we speak, and we want to send notification to officers Hansen and Miller, who have indicated that African-American lives do not matter in the city of Albert Lea. So just want to pass that on. We'll be talking about that a little later on in the program. But go ahead, Mr. Allen. We have two outstanding guests with us, if you will, who will talk a little bit about election controversy. Why am I not surprised? Pertaining to the NAACP of Duluth, Minnesota.
Go ahead, Mr. Edwards. I know you're not surprised, but we had talked about this over a year ago in December through about March. Some of the processes just here with the local NAACP, but turns out we have a situation in Duluth, Minnesota, where a young 22-year-old University of Minnesota Duluth college student won the election in November. She was voted in fair and square by the members that were present, counted for, and less than a month later, the former president, who had been there more than 25 years, I gather, decided to use his own list that he did not share with any of the effort unit bylaws and election procedures with any of the other candidates, and called a group of rogue NAACP members Duluth to have this meeting to vote him in office. Now, Mr. Edwards, the funny thing about this situation was earlier last year, I think it was in the fourth quarter of last year, there was a vote taken by the Duluth NAACP to ask this gentleman to resign. It was 18-2-1 in favor, 18, for him to resign. He did not adhere to the memberships.
All right, let me be clear for our audiences, okay, both domestically and internationally. 18 card-carrying members in good standing of the NAACP of Duluth asked longtime President Claudel Washington to step down. I understood that two of them abstained, and only actually one person, it must have been President Washington, voted for him to stay. Is that what we're saying?
That might have been the case, but that's exactly what I'm saying. So with that said, Mr. Edwards, we have sent out correspondence to the national NAACP branch office or national office in Baltimore, Maryland, to the director of units, Reverend Gil Ford. We have tried to contact the Minnesota State Conference Chair, W.C. Jordan, to no avail. And we also sent requests up to Duluth for Mr. Washington to join us and for Mr. Ford in Baltimore, Maryland, to join us, which we have not received any confirmations or a whisper. But I did receive, Mr. Edwards, before I bring them on, introduce and bring them on, I did receive an email from Mr. Gil Ford, the director of the unit for the NAACP nationally.
He is director of the local branches. Yes. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the email was kind of shocking, and I would say to the point of abusive, the way he described why people about Minneapolis. Well, let me just read it. It's right here. Sent on Tuesday. This Tuesday of this week, it says, Zimmer St. Allen, Minneapolis faction that destroyed a unit that had one time raised in excess of $250,000 annually, brought Nelson Mandela when he became president, won numerous awards in the NAACP, had a strong youth program, and now couldn't raise over $200 a month to rent in the office they had. I'm reading this unedited. Moreover, the young adults abandoned the association because they could not afford to have their employment and or reputation destroyed in the media. This gentleman is a remnant of that group. Now, I don't have any idea who he's talking about, you know, to tell you the truth.
Well, it may be because I was present during that entire controversy almost 15 years ago. First of all, what happened in Minneapolis with the Minneapolis branch, between the Minneapolis branch, the state conference in which Claudel Washington was also the state conference president at the time, as well as president of the Duluth branch, and the national office doesn't have anything to do with what you just indicated a couple minutes ago with regards to a questionable election and a vacating of the results of the first election. So I don't understand, you know, maybe Reverend Ford had had a little too much wine, you know, maybe he had been at some kind of ecumenical celebration and maybe a little bit too much wine, because that sounds like a communique from a man who has lost his perspective. So I don't understand what he was trying to say, what he was trying to convey. What happened in Minneapolis, 15 years ago doesn't have anything to do with what happened to Ms. Dudley and others, but it does reflect a pattern in practice, as lawyers like to say, and I assume that, though he's not an attorney, that Reverend Ford has a somewhat of an understanding of law. And you start talking about pattern in practice, because you had the same kind of controversy here a year ago in Minneapolis, when the National had to come in and actually place the Minneapolis branch in receivership because of controversy about elections, allegations of monies not being paid, bills and obligations not being met. But what's happened since then, after having an election on December 3rd of 2013 and having one attempted meeting in January of 2014, The Minneapolis branch of the NAACP here locally has not had a meeting since then. Is that what Reverend Ford is talking about?
Yeah, it could be. I mean, he wouldn't clarify it. Phone calls were diverted to someone that had no idea. There's only so many times you want to explain the whole situation to a new person, and I get tired of that after the first time, so I didn't bother to go into detail with
it. Okay. Now, it's my understanding in regards to the guest that we have on,
yes,
that the major newspaper in Duluth, by the way, for our listening audience, the city of Duluth is close to a population of about 100,000, a couple of large institutions of higher learning, if you will, that the major paper there, the Duluth Tribune, has indicated some editorial commentary and reflections. I know there have been at least four articles, if you will, as well as a story in which President Washington was calling for unity, and maybe our callers from Duluth can explain what was the unity about. I mean, why was there a need for unity if President Washington and his crew's hands were clean?
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'd like to welcome our guest tonight. We have, first of all, President-elect of the of the Duluth Urban League branch, Ms. Cassie.
NAACP, Don. You said Urban League.
I'm sorry. I was reading something from the Urban. I'm sorry, Mr. The NAACP Duluth branch, again, Kathy Dudley and her father, Mr. Harrison Dudley, live on the phone with us. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Okay,
thank
well,
you.
We'd like to know. Yeah, thank you. And we'd like to know, Kathy. We'll start with you. What happened? What was the original? We know, you know, Mr. Harrison and I, and we'll explain it to our listeners too. There's a procedure that happens from like August to September to October to get to that November election. Can you kind of walk us through kind of what happened and how you ended up being voted in as president? Please do that.
All right. For the NAACP elections, which we're supposed to have every 2 years, in January of 2014, we're supposed to have an election, and we haven't had one in over 15 years, which our secretary has stated ourselves. We put together a nominating committee, which then nominated myself and also Claudia Washington for the position of the president of the NAACP Duluth branch. What happened was our secretary stated that she wasn't fully aware if I was even eligible to run due on me being a member of the Duluth branch. When I started to be politically active in the NAACP, I joined online because I wasn't aware of our Duluth branch chapter being active. Once I noticed we started having meetings and I solicited members to be a branch in good standing again, I took my membership from an at-large membership and I sent it to a Duluth branch membership back in June 2013. What our secretary was trying to say is that the national branch never sent my at-large portion profits to the local branch, therefore not verifying me as a Duluth branch member.
Okay.
That alone
You've heard of that
would
before.
Have yeah, that alone would have disqualified me if I was not a Duluth branch member. In the bylaws in our constitution, it clearly states that you have to be a member of the branch to participate in any election. So I had correspondence with June Bethany Christ. She is the deputy director of membership of the national organization, who sent me an email stating that I have been a Duluth branch member since 2013, June 2013.
Wow.
So, yes, and so with that, my nominating committee and the supervisory election committee put my name on the ballot, and I won. What happened after that?
Excuse me, Ms. Dudley, for the purposes of absolute historical continuity, could you tell us what the vote was in that election in which you were elected?
It was 16-12.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I was not in the room when any of this happened, so I just heard from the election supervisory committee of these members.
Okay.
Yeah, I was not aware that my name was even going to be on the ballot till the day of the election as well. And, you know, through protocols, if your name, clearly says if my name is on the ballot, I have the right to look at not only the membership list, so I can go through and, you know, tell them that I am running for office. I was not given that chance. And I know
I'm sorry, just need to interject something there. You're saying per the unit bylaws, which says that if you're running for office, the unit should share the branch list with you so you can lobby for yourself with all the members, correct? And you did not see that.
I did not do that.
And if I might interject something, because I was one of the tellers on the supervisor committee, because person running for president can have a teller to advocate on their behalf to make sure everything is in order. And
yes.
I had, prior to the election, had requested the membership list several times in writing to the branch secretary, and myself and two other person made a request of the membership list so the president could contact those. And afterwards, I did an exit interview, and some of the people that voted hadn't been contacted in 10 years. That was the first time that they had ever been contacted
wow.
by the unit. And therefore, I think the votes probably would have been, you know, was askew because, and I got the numbers in my little book here. I asked some basic questions as to how were you notified and how often were you notified. And out of the many that voted, the only ones that was, that had attended meetings and things that to that effect was the ones that, you know, we had saw at the meeting. But it was plenty of people there that hadn't attended meetings in many, many years.
Okay.
So,
and what was that, Mr. Dudley, what was that number again on that particular evening of the election? What the final tally was what again?
I believe it was 16 to 12 is what I heard.
All right, 16 to 12. Okay. In other words, 28 dues-carrying eligible members of the branch voted in that election. Okay. Go ahead. Go ahead if you would.
All right. So upon the election and me winning, me being elected to serve as the president of the Duluth branch, I was the first membership meeting that is the last membership meeting of our old president. He came with a letter from our state conference president saying that not only was this election not valid, that we will be having a new election within 30 days, and that was it. There was no further discussion on who's going to be on the ballot. Why are we having a new election? Did anybody contest the election? You know, according to the bylaws in our Constitution, in order to contest any election, you must have 25 signatures from members in good standing and send it in 5 days after the election has taken place.
Right.
Which was not
done. Now, this letter that outgoing President Claudel Washington had was from State Conference President W.C. Jordan. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, and,
signed by him. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
It was signed by
okay.
him. And we examined the letter, and we noticed that he says that the reason that they're having a new election is because I was not a valid candidate. And we have in his email, he quotes our state or our secretary, who quotes the youth chapter bylaws that would say I was ineligible, which doesn't apply to our issue right now. He also quotes in his emails that he had spoken to the chair of the Election Supervisory Committee, Bethany Christ was June, the deputy director of membership. He spoke to Reverend Ford and our board member, Deidre Doolin, along with the Election Supervisory Committee of National Board, in which our membership actually requested any emails or correspondence from any of those people he said he contacted, which he declined to provide.
Okay. All right. Now, State Conference President Jordan did not journey to Duluth. He was not present there that night in the room. His decision was delivered by letter by the outgoing president, Claudel Washington. Am I correct on that again?
We don't know who sent it. When we took a vote, did anybody contest the election? No one raised their hand. Claudia Washington did present the letter, so we're assuming that he's the one who sent out something, but we have no idea.
Well, I asked you earlier, though, on the question of the letter that Claudia mm-hmm. Washington presented. I asked you specifically, and I think you answered in the affirmative, that the letter allegedly was signed by the state conference president. It would have
yes.
had to have been only the state conference president or the chairman of elections for the national branches could have invalidated. So this was from President Jordan, who is the state conference president, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
And with that said, I would like to just hold for a minute because we have a persistent phone caller here, and I would like to get this person on the air to ask you this question, if that's okay. I know phone lines, we haven't really opened them up, but the person could be
We get the caller, let the caller
go
in.
Go ahead, caller, you're live on air. Who's calling, and what's your question?
This is Lenny. Question is, what has the organization from the national standpoint and the local standpoint in Duluth stood for the last 25 years under the current president? I've been in Minnesota for many years, and I don't recall him ever taking a position on anything. Maybe I'm incorrect.
Miss Dudley or Mr. Harrison Dudley, either one of y'all want to take that one on?
I would take that one because I'm a little older and been around a little longer and more involved. I had to pretty much agree with that caller. The chapter itself has not grown. We have not developed our youth. We have not increased our membership. And what I mean by that is a active membership. The role that we have taken here has been that we only get involved when there is something happened. That's been the quote directly out of our out of Mr. Weister's mouth. People don't get involved unless there is something happening.
Okay.
And my response to that was that it's incumbent upon our leadership to draw these people in and to form these committees, the prison committee, the education committees, all these different committees, and make them active. So, yes, we hadn't pretty much had any types of action plans and follow-throughs for many, many years. I myself been in and out of the community because of my job. But every time I'm back, I get involved into it, and I hadn't saw any growth in the organization. And this
okay.
is not the
All
first
right.
time that, you know, we have tried to actually motivate the base, and it's always been put down. But I had to applaud this young lady. She would not. She's like a little bulldog. She won't let it go because she's
okay.
some injustice here.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Go right ahead. Continue, if you would,
sure,
with the narrative. We now have the letter
Thank
in the hands
it.
Of the state conference, well, the so-called branch president, Mr. Washington. And so now tell us about the second election.
Well, upon notification of the second election, our membership was very disappointed and upset. They felt like we didn't even understand why National was getting involved since there had not been anybody who contested it. And we did not believe that National was taking the right protocols to get involved. And so there was numerous emails sent out, which we did not get a response, numerous letters, which we still have yet to get a response as well. The last thing that I received from Reverend Ford himself was stating that instead of my dues not being paid correctly, that my lapse in membership was the reason that I was ineligible. So it changed from my dues not from being a Duluth member to I had a lapse in my membership, which disqualified me, which I promptly asked if he would provide the Constitution bylaws that state anywhere with a continuous membership is the only way you can run for president. You can't have any lapse in membership in order to run for office, which he could not respond.
Continue on.
Yes. After that, we seek response from the National Subcommittee of Membership, which actually does all the rulings on these issues, and we had to go through the process of sending in a formal complaint to President Brooke, CEO. We sent it to Rosalind Brock and the Board of Directors. We sent it to the National NAACP General Counsel, as well as Dr. Ernest Johnson, who is the chair of the National Director Board Supervisory Committee of Elections. And we sent out to all those, and we have yet to get a response still. But our membership, you know, we are not letting up on this issue. We did get one response back from Ford, which stated that now the issue moved from my dues to the lapse, And now it moved to the third issue, and the only thing he states was that the reason that the last election was not eligible was due to our chair of our supervisory committee, because he illegally put my name on the ballot, and he did not have the authority, in which our membership promptly responded, and we said, no, our membership chair did not put any name on the ballot illegally. We voted as a membership of the Duluth branch to put my name on the ballot. And we sent them the minutes of our meeting to prove that, to show the vote of it. And we still have yet to get a response in accordance to that.
Okay. Now, we have, at some point, we have the second election to, as an outgrowth of the invalidation of the first election, which you were elected president on a 16-12 vote. What happened in that election, and what were the tabulated results?
The second election took place on January 10th. We were...
My birthday.
Not... Oh, happy belated birthday.
Yeah, all right.
We were only notified about 5 days before the election took place. And some of our members weren't even contacted or notified.
Uh-huh.
The election, all they did in the election was take my name and a few other people's name off the ballot.
Okay.
My concern is that, so the only name on there was Mr. Washington. And my concern, one, was that there were other people who wanted to run if I was not eligible. If the national was going to rule that I was ineligible, there was other people who wanted to run, and they were not allowed to. We were not allowed to take any nominations from the floor. Secondly, there was just two other names that were taken off the ballot that nobody discussed about. There was no email sent to national regarding the other two memberships. There was no confirmation from national, from state, from anything about these two memberships, so they were unjustly taken off the ballot. So, and we had a low turnout for that one, and I don't recall the numbers as well. I think Harrison will know that.
Mr. Dudley, could you just give us the numbers? What was the numbers at the second election?
It was, once again, it was 26 members that turned out. It was a vote of 16-10 in favor of Mr. Washington, and 10 failed to vote for him at all. And
okay.
Out of the 26 that showed up through there, I can say factually that only about 12 of them were ever actually at a meeting for this last, and I pretty much have been at every meeting for the last year. So I can say out of the, it's about 12 that never showed up for a meeting and never showed up.
All right, let me ask this question, Mr. Dudley. This is for you, sir, because you have been a member for many years, as you pointed out, and, of course, you've also been a resident of Duluth for many years, since I think in our discussion since certainly 1989. Because of the nature of what was said, and this is, as Mr. Allen, as I kind of educated my colleague this time last year, Mr. Allen, on the protocols and requirements of the Constitution, who supervised the second election? It was supervised by who? Mr. Washington was
Mr.
a
Jordan?
Contested candidate. He could not. Oh, Mr. Jordan came up from Rochester?
Mr. Jordan, yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would just like to add for information that after that January 10th election, that three of our executive committee members, whose name was on the ballot, dropped out. They said they would not serve under that presidency.
Okay, of Mr. Washington. But the election was supervised by the state conference president, who also, by the way, for our listening audience, is the president of the Rochester NAACP, who has declined to investigate police misconduct and brutality in the city of Albert Lea, which is in southern Minnesota, and which is about 40 miles south of Rochester. That's the same, Mr. Jordan. Okay, all right. Continue on, please, whatever narrative you want to give us. Go ahead.
Well, just before the election, I just want to read like a couple questions from the general membership, because I don't want the listening audience to think that it's just a two-person barrage on certain individuals. It's all about equality and revitalization and getting the NAACP revitalized, because what they are going to face now is totally different from what we faced 20 years ago, and we need those youth to be involved. But here's a couple. I'm not going to read all of them. I got about 12.
Go right ahead, sir. We've got plenty of time. Go right ahead.
And it states from this, I'm not going to give any names from, but, you know, I can actually send you copies of these emails. A couple of people don't mind. It's going out to you. And they say, "Hello, Mr. Jordan. I was disappointed that the Minnesota Conference has scheduled another election for our Duluth branch. A couple of questions. What are the criteria that you're claiming that Ms. Gutley and maybe others is ineligible to run? Where is it in the NAACP bylaws and constitution that such criteria is stated?" And they say, "I have read the bylaws and constitution, and they see no such thing that relate to what you are claiming that she's ineligible for." And they say, "According to the secretary and the minutes from the November meeting, Ms. Dudley was ineligible because she wasn't a member on April the 1st. That's what they claimed first. That was the first ineligible.
Yes.
And that was disproved later, so they went to a second one. I'm not going to go there. Another letter states, Dear Mr. Ford, the purpose of this correspondence is to ask you a few questions. First of all, thank you for sending the notice of the election for this Saturday, January the 10th. I'm not sure I understand what would take place on Saturday. When are the nominations? Who will be on the ballot? Who will not be on the ballot? When I read the national office to intervene pursuant to the article, whatever, blah, 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 it seems to say 3 months prior to the election. It does not say at any time or after the election. It seems clear from Mr. Jordan's letter that the decision for the national office to intervene occurred after election. This is very important. And the email on November, you know, he goes on and on about some other things. Another one read, please find my question concerning the NAACP Duluth branch 4049 election this day, January, things go on. And he asks, in which you please acknowledge receipt of this email containing my question and please respond. And we have never received any response back from him regarding this election to Mr. Jordan. And these was done like at the 1st of November when it first came out, all these emails. So
1st of November 2014. Is that right? 1st of November 2014. Okay.
His election that he, once he sent out that there was going to be a new election, members sent out questions regarding would we be able to nominate other individuals? Who would all be allowed to vote, you know? Why, you know, what would be the criteria, you know? And they asked for a response, and he never responded to any of those questions. They just showed up.
Okay. Now, could you either you or your daughter indicate to me and help our audience with a couple of reflections. There was a letter apparently to the major paper there, the Duluth Tribune, where Mr. Washington called for unity. Could you just enlighten us on why was that call made, and what did Mr. Washington expect to do with that call?
I am a psychology major by trade.
Okay.
And I am just as confused about what he means about unity when the only thing he has to do is to abide by what the majority has spoken. What unity is all about. You know, we had, you know, democracy is that you vote on some majority rule, and we're talking about a volunteer position, and it involved community members. So when they you're in a volunteer position, community member vote that we need a change in leadership, and it's nothing out of your pocket unless I'm seeing something, you know, that I don't know about, that I myself or a reasonable person would assume that I have served my course and I should turn it over because my constituency out there whom I serve. And, you know, I think to me when he asks for this unity and this type of thing, you got to realize who is causing the disunity.
Yes, it's he and his faction, including state and national NAACP leadership. Mr. Jordan as the state conference president, and, of course, Reverend Ford as the director of branches of the national NAACP. Yeah. I think that's an excellent analysis. If I were your professor, I'd give you an A on your analysis of the logic or lack of. But go right ahead, sir. Continue on.
It's the community that is being held hostage, you know. We have had a outpour of community support. You know, it's just amazing. I didn't know that the community was so tuned in to the lack of any kind of activity of the NAACP. I didn't know that until people was approaching me on the street at my work profession and congratulating my daughter through me, saying, well, you know, that's good. We need a revitalization. It's by time, this type of thing. You had heads organizations that was supporting this move, and they was ready to move on. But once again, once you have been into a position for so long, you build a lot of, I don't know what you want to call it, but, you know, you build a lot of the ability to put scare in some people.
Well, you create fear and animosity towards the proposition and the issue, yes. I mean, the animosity that is being built up there in Duluth has to be of concern to responsible leadership. I mean, I hate to kind of use that word, but this is not the first time that there's been controversy with regards to the regime. Notice I use that word, the regime of Claudel Washington. And this has not been the first time that these tactics have been used by that same combination, a local branch president, the state conference president, because actually 20 years ago, Claudel Washington used these same kinds of tactics in his role as both president of the Duluth branch and state conference president against the both Minneapolis and St. Paul branch and the undermining at that time of the St. Cloud branch of the NAACP. So there's a long, sordid history of these kinds of tactics. In fact, if I were at a war college, I would certainly indicate to the superintendent of the war college that we write a manual in the book on the tactics of the NAACP in Minnesota. But I'm sorry, Mr. Dudley. Go right ahead. I know my colleague, Mr. Allen, may have some questions. But don't let me interrupt you, sir. Continue right on.
Okay. For clarity purpose, okay, someone had a question?
Mr. Allen, you have any questions?
But
I don't think that Mr. Allen does look like he may be on the call. You continue right on because this is an educational sojourn that we're on.
I just want to clarify for the listener once again on how this situation is so absurd. In October, the first determination of ineligibility was done by the branch secretary.
What is her name, by the way? We haven't mentioned her name. What is her name?
Ms. Witherspoon, the branch secretary.
Yes. She's been the secretary for as long as Claudia's been the president. But go ahead.
Correct.
Yeah, Mr. Edwards, I'm sorry. I just heard you a minute ago. I was trying to find W.C. Jordan's telephone number. I thought I had it here because I really want him to pick up the phone tonight like he did last time. But I'm still searching. I'm still searching.
I don't think he will. But go right ahead, Mr. Dudley.
Sure. Okay,
Sharon. That's Sharon Witherspoon, correct?
Yes. And this is very important because this is within the bylaws. This how to, you know, in October, in the September meeting, you're supposed to do certain things that refer back to that defer to October, and then in October, at the end of October. It doesn't say you could, or it says you must have your ballot done at the end meeting in October, which we did have, and Classy was on that ballot.
Mm-hmm.
She was on the ballot right then. So that was within the bylaws. Now, she was on the ballot. The only thing of concern was that it was going to be a determination of eligibility because at the October meeting, she was determined to be ineligible based on this statement right here, due to no payment of due, well, annotated in the books of the local branch, and therefore she was ineligible to run for office. In other words, they said she was not a member of the Duluth branch as of April 1st. And during that meeting, the question was asked of her, and she said, yes, I am. And she had showed me her membership with the Duluth branch as of June 2013. So the membership voted until we got a response back from the National regarding that issue that her name would go forward. Therefore, we met the bylaws for that October meeting that it was resolved. Now, the second determination, once Ms. Witherspoon sent this out to Mr. Ford, Mr. Jordan emailed back on November the 24th, and he concurred with what she said without doing any type of research. He said, per the attached notation from the 11-16-2014 minutes from Secretary Witherspoon and per Bethany Christ June from the National Office state that Ms. Dudley placed a request in January, would like to take the opportunity to state in writing a verification of 24, and he went on about the bylaws, and he said he quoted the National Director of Membership that said that she hadn't heard, well, it was a 90-day thing in there. He had all in there. He had a second determination of ineligibility, what I'm trying to say. So he came up.
Oh, I can believe it. I've seen that same modus operandi used in over the last 20 years. I mean, I hate to say it to our listening audience, Mr. Allen, Mr. and Mrs. Dudley. I mean, I've seen these same tactics going back over 20 years. Over 20 years.
And we requested not only an impartial investigation, but investigation. We never got one. It was our word from our secretary, and they took it. In the emails, we looked at our secretary referenced youth bylaws. That doesn't apply to what we're doing here. And Jordan,
and you pointed that out very well. Yes.
Yes, and as well as that, Reverend Ford sent something to us saying that my membership had lapsed from 90 days, which was also false.
Okay. That,
and by the way, on that particular note, if I could, and certainly lending a historical perspective, Secretary Witherspoon clearly knew that she was providing significant ambiguity because she's, as I said, she's been the Secretary of the Branch for as long as Claudel Washington has been the president off and on, though he took a couple years off to allegedly relocate to Jacksonville, Florida. But Ms. Witherspoon has been the Secretary of the Branch for probably 22, 23, 24 years. Am I correct, Mr. Dudley?
That's correct.
Thank you.
Yeah, she was, when I was here in 89, she was Secretary. Now, that was the third, two different determinations. The third determination came from Ford. And he used Article 9, Section 2F, and it shall be the duty of the Election Supervisory Committee. And that's on page 62 of the bylaws. He went a whole different route. Now, based on what Ms. Witherspoon sent to Mr. Ford, and Mr. Ford, I mean to Mr. Jordan, and Mr. Jordan sent to Mr. Ford, it appears that they all looking for something. Otherwise, they would have been consistent with that first determination of ineligibility.
Yes,
but they all
yes.
keep coming back with something different.
Now,
Ford,
let me say on that particular point, and my colleague is there and certainly can speak for himself with great eloquence, but that's the same tactic they used on Mr. Allen last year.
Oh, yes.
That same tactic.
Same thing.
To oust
you
him
know,
as the second vice president of the Minneapolis NAACP. Am I correct, Mr. Allen?
You are absolutely correct, Mr. Edwards. This was the same, and I went through this kind of the same process that you're going through now by calling these folks, not getting any response, have them lying to you in the face. Matter of fact, I recorded a video, which I'm looking forward to, and we actually played it on the station of my conversation with Mr. Ford trying to get it.
Excuse me, if I could. You said a video, you meant an audio.
Yeah, I made it a video so everyone I could distribute it widely.
Oh,
yeah,
that's right. You did posted it on YouTube. Right.
Yeah. And I had audio, and I couldn't believe what I was hearing out of this man's voice because, Mr. Edwards, you have, you know, as my mentor and colleague, you have walked me through these steps and kind of guided me. And you warned me, too. So
yes, I
did. I dismissed the warning. I said, oh, this is the NAACP. I'm the second vice. We're going to go ahead and do it. And I ran into a cement wall at 60 miles an hour. Okay, without a seatbelt on. Okay, and I mean, that's how ugly this whole situation was. Matter of fact, I just want to play like a minute and a half of this. Is that okay? I did find it.
Well, this is not
okay.
So much for me. This is for the Dudleys so that they
yes.
can hear the pattern, and I've used the legal term, the pattern and practice of this quote-unquote mafia group within the NAACP.
Yeah.
Go right ahead, Mr. Allen.
Gil Ford, please. Reverend Ford, please.
Speaking.
Reverend Ford, my name is Don Allen. I'm calling you from Minneapolis, Minnesota. How are you today?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
I'm doing absolutely wonderful. I had telephoned you yesterday, and there seems to be some confusion about my standing here in the Minneapolis NAACP over some funds that I paid with my credit card to the National, and I am a member of Branch 4050 per my membership card. And I need to get that cleared up sooner than later.
Okay, well, if you pay through the National, then pursuant to Article 4, Section 2 of the bylaws, your membership in the branch is not effective until the branch receives its portion of the membership.
And I don't have control over that, number one. Number two, this was a special election.
I understand, and I understand the guidelines of special elections because I'm the person responsible for their being conducted. And within a special election, we give individuals an opportunity to pay on site because we don't have the authority to supersede the policy that has been ratified by the convention or the delegates that basically set these policies in place. And so the policy still is that if you, in essence, prior to the election, individuals could have joined, paid their membership, and they would have been eligible. But if they join through the national office, your membership is not effective in the branch until the branch receives its portion.
And that's not what Mr. Jordan said the night of the election. He said,
Mr. Jordan, if he said anything else than that, he would have been wrong because it would have contradicted the policy.
Well, he said, quote, and it's actually on tape. I did not film it. A news person that was there filmed the whole proceedings, and he said, and I quote, that the bylaws do not apply here. This is a special election. You can either pay online, but you have to have proof of that. And he even put that out a couple of days even before the 13th. So
I would have to find that, and then I'd have to still correct them because, again, staff doesn't have the authority to change the policy.
Okay, that's just enough of that crap. Anyway, or bull crap. That was, you know, this is inherently terrible what they've done to Ms. Dudley in Rochester, and the folks in Cincinnati, Mr. Edwards.
You mean in Duluth.
No, I'm talking about Cincinnati. There's a big article online that was posted in December 2014 about this same thing that happened in Duluth is happening in Cincinnati with Mr. Ford, Reverend Ford.
Okay, well, you said Rochester. You said Rochester. You meant Cincinnati. Okay, because we want to be absolutely clear.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. What I'm saying is in Cincinnati it happened, and here in Minneapolis we know it's happened tons of times, and now Duluth, this thing with Ms. Dudley and the group up there. So I guess at this point, how do we get corrective action out of these people, if we get any at all? It seems to be tough, and this has been – go ahead, Mr. Dudley.
Mr. Dudley, Ms. Dudley, please enlighten us and without giving away all of your strategy, if you will, what you're comfortable with, where do we go from here?
Well, you know, when you mention like this happening in Cincinnati and Duluth, we can say it happening in Philadelphia, Brooklyn, Lima, Ohio, Norwalk, North Carolina, Indianapolis, South Florida, Fort Wayne, Tulsa, Long Island, Minneapolis, Cleveland, San Jose, North San Diego County, Seattle, King County. All these, and this is just a sampling of what I got off the internet, and all these like 11/28/14, 11/19/14, 11/15/14, all these are this year, and they are election ineligibility based on these little nuances, and I only took a sampling of some of them. It was like 11 pages of these things, and what it seems to be like a trend, you know, it's not the NAACP. It's only a few individuals that are using their own personal judgment to manipulate a process that should be purely democratic. It should be purely for the community. You know, anything that the community wants, if we can make it happen without creating any kind of injustice, I don't see, and then empowering our youth, you know, I don't see what the issue is. And I thought that's what it was all about, you know. It was all those young kids from colleges and you know, getting on those buses making a difference. Now all of a sudden, you know, we think we have arrived and we want to keep them down there, you know. We got these youth chapters, and you go out through the country, and I guarantee the youth chapters are probably not as active as they should be.
Oh, I know they're not as active as I knew them 20 years ago. I'd like to do this, Harrison. Ms. Dudley, what is your vision for the NAACP and this controversy?
I would like the NAACP purely to just listen to our membership and our community. Our community knows what we need more than anyone, more than Reverend Ford, more than W.C. Jordan, and more than Cornell Brook himself. Our community has actively sought something new, and we want to go in a new direction. I am merely here to help push that forward in regards to what the body wants. I'm not trying to do this for my personal gain or for my father's personal gain. I have actively fought against racism and other prejudice issues and for social justice. And I will continue to do it regardless of what the NAACP does that decides in this election. That is my choice, and our membership has said that as well. But in the NAACP, we want them to follow and listen to their bylaws. We have followed their bylaws. We have done what we needed to do. The membership has spoken, and they want to be heard. You know, we put in motion for it.
Let me ask you a question as it pertains to the demographics. What is, to the best of your knowledge based on the last sentence, what is the African-American population in Duluth and Superior, Wisconsin, right across the harbor? And what is the percentage of African-American students at the colleges, and what is the percentage, to the best of your knowledge, of African-American students in the Duluth Public Schools? Because I am well aware of the integration controversy that's been going on in Duluth for over a decade. Could you walk us through some of those statistics if you have them there at your fingertips?
Yes, and it is a very small demographic. It is small. We are, in Duluth, our African-American population is, depending on the school and the community, we are less than 7%.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And specifically in the college, we only make up 2%.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And the population of Duluth last census was about, what, 92,000,
93,000? 86,000.
86, okay. And but there has, by the way, for our listening audience, there has been a black population in Duluth since 1877, easily. And at one time, the black population in Duluth was at probably about 13% before the lynchings in 1921, which is certainly one of the blemishes on the whole state of Minnesota. But again, do you see support coming for your issues and the controversy coming from some of the college-age students there in Duluth?
Absolutely. They have been overwhelmingly supportive. There is a all-black magazine that our student coalition put together, and they made statements about the NAACP. Our Duluth News Tribune put an opinion of their view on what's happening, which was in support of us, too. I'm trying to think. I've got numerous emails and Facebook and telephone calls, just all in support, as well as people in our membership have gotten the same support as well. People have came up to me and asked to join the NAACP just so they can have a voice in helping this issue.
All right. Now, for our listening audience and understanding the demographics, for those that don't have a map or have not called up a map, you actually, technically, the Duluth NAACP is also representing the interest of the African-American population in the city of Superior, Wisconsin, which is across the bay. Is that correct?
That is correct.
All right. Now, I'm not sure what the population is in Superior, probably about 2%, 3%, but that could be anywhere from 200 to 300 to 500 African Americans, and then you have others of color. So you do have a base. In fact, I think you made that statement a couple times during your reflections. There is a base of African American talent, if you will, in what is called the Twin Ports. Am I correct?
Yes.
All right. So it's not like, you know, y'all just up there, three or four of you, as your father indicated earlier. It's not, it's just, and you, I think that you said it very eloquently, it's not just about two people. It's about an entire population with, apparently, as I'm understanding it now, strong support from individuals of other races and groups, particularly on campus. Now, you have two major institutions of higher learning. Well, you actually have three, because you have Superior State across the bay. You have the University of Minnesota at Duluth, UMD, and you have St. Scholastica. Is that correct?
Yes, and we also have our community college, Lake Superior College.
That's right. Okay. So there is an academic base there of young, bright minds who would like to participate in something that your father reflected on earlier, that would like to deal with some of the problems and issues affecting the so-called Twin Ports area. Is that correct? And that entire region, because you have problems. In fact, I was up there a couple of years ago on a problem in Hibbing. You have problems in Hibbing of race, if you will. You have problems in Eveleth, if you will. And so it's not like that there is not a problem with actions and issues that needs an NAACP, an honest NAACP, a committed NAACP, an effective NAACP, and an NAACP that, you know, at least is on call.
Exactly.
What is the last issue, if I can ask both of you, Mr. Misadetta, what is the last issue under President Claudel Washington that the NAACP took up, including the issue of integration in the schools? Can you? Because the only caller we've had so far tonight raised the question about, I mean, really, what is the mission of the NAACP? Could you just walk us through some issues that, particularly your father, who has been there since 1989, that President Claudel Washington has taken up and has stood tall as it pertains to the African-American residents of the Twin Ports? Could you just tell me a couple things he's done here in the last, 12, 13 years?
You know, the issue is, with him is not that he is not taking on the issue. It's just the follow-through. There has been very little follow-through. The issue, you know, we get out, as we customarily say, we get out, we beat our chest, and then we go back, and nothing changed. You go out. You shake the bush, and you go back, you know, and whatever come out the bush, you know, you don't follow up with anything. You know, in other words, if you go on the national website, you see all these action plans that they have. And to me, I don't see why we don't tie in with their action plan, because their action plan is very germane to our action plans. You know, we still have profiling. They doing profiling. They doing prison, you know, that prison pipeline. All these are common from the national all the way down. And you know, you go to these meetings and there's no consistency in anything that's happened. There's no follow-up. There's no plan. And there's excuses like people don't get involved. I heard that many times, way too many times. It's up to the leadership to make people get involved, to go out and get people involved. You know, go knock on doors, you know, bring people in. That's always what you know, I have advocated.
Right. Could you talk to us a little bit, both you and your daughter, a little bit about the Black ecumenical community and now some of the concerns being expressed by the powerful white ecumenical community in the Twin Ports area? Could you talk to us a little bit about that? Where is the Black ecumenical community on this issue?
That's the issue. They are, let's stand back and watch. You know, I have contacted a few, and the issue is that they are, most of them are members of the NAACP, but they're on a national level.
I see. That's interesting.
Yeah,
okay.
They don't see a true organization. They believe, just like we do, we believe in organizations, but we don't believe in being active because there is no activity.
Wow.
There is just a show up, beat your chest, go back home, and that's it.
Gotcha.
Well, I want to interject a question real quick here. Has there been any projects, like with the city of Rochester or the state focused on Rochester, where the leadership of the old leadership of the NAACP has bucked up and went to meetings and lobbied for a particular company, agency, project, or organization?
John, you said Rochester, don't you mean Duluth?
Duluth, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why I keep saying Rochester.
I'm looking
for this guy's number, and it's driving me crazy, so I'm sorry.
WC Jordan. I had it too, but I think I put it in storage. But go ahead, Mr. Dunn.
Yeah, I apologize.
There are major projects that go on all the time because Duluth is one of the largest inland ports in the United States. I mean, I know there's a lot of projects, a lot of construction going on up in there, the Army Corps of Engineers and et cetera. Mr. Allen's question, I think, goes to how are African-Americans being encouraged to apply for some of those good, excellent jobs up there in the Twin Ports area and et cetera. I mean, I have heard President Claudel Washington make statements about how well things are. By the way, we didn't talk about his history, and you know, we don't want to make it personal, but I've known Claudel for 30 years. But as I said, he at one time he was the city of Duluth's purchasing agent. Wasn't that correct, Mr. Dudley?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Yes. and served that position for quite some time, because if I'm not mistaken, I think he actually came to the city of Duluth as a – he is a veteran of the Air Force, if I'm not mistaken, and decided with his wife at that time, Maxine, I think, if I'm not mistaken, to settle down in Duluth. So at one time, for about 10 years, he was the city's purchasing agent. So I know that he made sure there was a lot of gravy for the African-American community there in Duluth, right?
Not aware of that.
I see. I just am reminded of being in meetings with him in the 1990s when I was actually I was the housing chair of the state conference board. And I can well remember we were involved as they were getting ready to build MOA, the big retail center down here in Minneapolis, and et cetera. And I can remember, you know, Claudie and the state conference wanting in on that. They had a friend of theirs by the name of Jesse Overton, who actually was assigned by the state conference to help monitor the negotiations pertaining to the construction of MOA. And I will just remember the reflections that Mr. Washington used to make, because he was the city purchasing agent in Duluth, and he really knew how the ball game went. But then I remember a situation with a young lady, Mr. Allen, who has called in this program last year, talking to us about the NAACP in Philadelphia, who had a business. She had a business, Mr. Dudley, Mrs. Dudley, in Brainerd. There were some problems there. This was about 10 years ago. Oops. And she called upon Claudette Washington and the Duluth NAACP to help her with those problems. And when it was all said and done, she lost her business because something that you said was absolutely profound and compelling. After many promises, Mr. Washington did not follow up. And this African-American woman and her husband lost their business in Brainerd, Minnesota.
Hmm.
Yeah. And and if I'd have been thanking Ms. Allen, I would have given her a call in Philadelphia and had her call in tonight.
Well, I like to let
because she was very familiar with the incompetency of the Washington administration, if you will. But what additional things would you like to share with us tonight as we begin to obviously move? We deeply appreciate you taking time from your schedules, both you and your daughter, to share with us how things don't work, but that we still have a right as African-Americans, the sons and daughters of the African, to have high expectations. Maybe that's the problem with President Washington and his crew, very small crew, that they think that the fires of expectation have died in us. Now, your father, Ms. Dudley, would have a great appreciation, because we would be somewhat out of the same generation, is that there's still fire in the belly, if you will, high expectations, if you will. But maybe President Washington has lost that. You know, maybe he's grown weary.
Oh, yeah.
You know, as we get older, and as I grew up, it was all about my brothers. I was the youngest, so it was all about my brothers mentoring me and showing me the way, because they realized that one day that I would have to tread down that path by myself and carry that name. You know, and that's what, you know, I try to encourage with most of the black youth and other people, you know, the young people, because they're the ones that are going to pay for my Social Security. So I want them to be
both of our Social Securities, both of them. thank you.
They are
my protectors. Your daughter and her millennium, they are my protectors that will guarantee that I will have some semblance of safety and comfort in the twilight of my years. You know.
And the primary thing I think we in my age group, we don't realize is that our challenges back then are totally different from the new challenges that these youths are facing today.
Yes, yes, yes.
And who?
And I remember being told by some very wise African Americans the same thing, based on the timeline, that there were challenges that we were going to face as young 20-year-old Negroes, as we were referred to in those days, that would be much more difficult, much more challenging than those that they had faced. And I was told that because I was blessed to have the experience and the wisdom of my two grandfathers, one who lived to be 96, one who lived to be 92. And I tell you, that personal history, Brother Dudley, is very, very important, very, very important.
And that's what we are challenging him to do, you know.
All right.
Give it up. Be a mentor to these young people. You know, you're more
valuable.
And
not an obstruction. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
He's way more valuable that way than trying to be out on the forefront, you know, trying to navigate these issues, which he don't have any type of contact with.
Yeah, I know.
We have enough problem trying to understand our own kids, let alone trying to understand a group of kids, you know, a young adult.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, to the Dudleys, I appreciate it. Mr. Allen, do you have any reflections as we
thank
them for the time that they've spent with us?
Yeah. Thank you very much. It's greatly appreciated. I mean, this is epic. Our podcast is going to be available right after the show is over, so you can distribute it to your network. So I'll make sure I email you a link, access the same link that is up there now. The show will just start playing. But I really appreciate this insight, and it validates Mr. Edwards and the Dudleys that I wasn't going crazy December 2013, that this stuff was really going on, and this wingnut was really talking to me like I was there. And so it really happened. So, yeah, it was like I said, it was a setback, but, you know, things happen and you understand, you move forward. Again, thank you for your time. Mr. Edwards, anything else?
I thank both Mr. Dudley and his lovely daughter. Thank you. And we'll be back in contact.
Thank you very much.
All right. Mr. Allen, give the phone number again. There may be some callers out there that may want to have some questions that I think we're more interested in listening to those people who are actually living, quote-unquote, the issue and the dream. But just throw the phone number out there in case there are any calls from any of our regulars, if you will. This has been a very enlightening conversation, I tell you. The NAACP, there has to be a reference that says shame, shame, shame.
Shame, shame, shame. Yeah, that number is 347-426-3904. Again, the phone lines are open at 347-426-3904.
And I understand we're going to basically go to the top of the hour to 10, Mr. Allen, Central Standard Time?
We're going to 10, yes.
Okay.
What has happened here, the chat room is overwhelmed. I have probably 20 people in the queue. And when I was offline, Mr. Edwards, I was going down asking each one of them if they'd like to come on and speak to the Dudleys or yourself or me. And no, we just want to listen. So I have zip codes from up and down the East Coast, Washington, D.C., 202, Seattle, Los Angeles, Houston, Texas, Cleveland, Ohio. I'm looking at them, the numbers right now.
Wow.
I'm just reading off the zip codes. Miami, Florida.
All right.
New Orleans.
Florida,
area.
Yes. I had conversation with some folks in Florida this afternoon. Let me take the opportunity now because, as I said at the top of the program, in the very serious situation, and certainly both of these situations are serious, but I want again let the African-American community of Albert Lea, Minnesota, know that they are not by themselves, and I want to send my best wishes out to the former president of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP in the late 1990s, Ms. Leola Seals, who now resides in Natchez, Mississippi, which is her hometown. By the way, did you know that Claudel Washington is also from Natchez, Mississippi?
I did not know that.
Isn't that something? I had a conversation again with former President Seals. But I want to let her know that, that the story is being told of the brutal beating of her grandson by Albert Lee police on Christmas Eve and continued threats against his life, if you will. There's now discussions going on about just taking him out of Albert Lee, possibly even to, and this is interesting, isn't it? Taking him to be with his grandmother and one of his uncles, who is a distinguished member of the Natchez, Mississippi Police Department, has been for 31 years. But there is great concern for the safety of the young man. And as I identified, Mr. Allen, at the top of our program, two very dangerous white police officers in Albert Lee, Minnesota, Officers Miller and Hansen. In fact, I received word earlier today that there has been some intercepts that a an offer for quote-unquote support to the Albert Lee Police Department has come from our buddies out in Idaho, the American Patriots Association, one of the most deadliest neo-Nazi organizations. They have a hell of a chapter there in Faribault, Minnesota, which is about 45 miles north of Albert Lee. And so I've just compelled my brother to indicate to our friends, to the small population of African Americans in Albert Lee, Minnesota, and Austin, Minnesota, which is about 30 miles to the east of Albert Lee, that people do know and people do care. Because they, I got to tell you, Brother Allen, they feel absolutely isolated. The African-American population there feels absolutely isolated. And for those that travel up and down Highway 35 coming up from Kansas City and Des Moines up to Minneapolis, St. Paul, you go right by Albert Lee, you see the signs. But I think it would be great if someone could begin to ask the governor of the state of Minnesota what is being done to provide safety for the African-American population in Albert Lee, Minnesota, and to a lesser degree, Austin. And I'm just outraged, my brother, that the NAACP in Rochester and the state conference president, as well as the Minnesota Department of Human Rights, as well as the Council on Black Minnesotans, I cannot express to you, after we had Papillon on the program, how saddened I am by the refusal of these three organizations to provide any assistance or make even inquiry. They were asked to at least make inquiry to the chief of police in Albert Lee, Minnesota, about the conduct of his officers, particularly led by Officers Miller and Officer Hansen. And they've refused, Mr. Allen. They've refused.
Oh, wow.
If there's anyone that has any specific questions, if you will, we stand ready to deal with that. By the way, the mother of the young man, we're not talking about some welfare recipients. She is one of the largest real estate agents in southern Minnesota and northern Iowa. She has her own company. She is, as I said, she is the daughter of the former president of the Minneapolis branch of the NAACP. And her grandson, of course, her son is, of course, the grandson of the legendary Leola Seals, who served with distinction. But it is terrible what the authorities are doing to African-Americans in Albert Lee, Minnesota. And nobody cares. Nobody cares.
Mm-hmm.
They whipping and beating and intimidating. They have actually, this young man has an excellent job for one of the major corporations. He's only 19 years old, very conscientious. They have been going to his job since the 27th, 28th of December, and they wait on him. And his mother has to go and pick him up from work because we're scared they're going to find him in a field somewhere with a bullet in his head.
That's how bad it is, man.
Albert Lee, Minnesota. And Albert Lee, by the way, as you know, Don, is a thriving city. Part of the meatpacking industry and et cetera. A lot of big money, as I said. The mother of the young man in question is one of the largest real estate agents, African-American woman, if you will, one of the largest real estate agents. She is known. She has been a member for the last 10 years of the Albert Lee Chamber of Commerce. But after they beat her son like they did, everybody went to playing crazy.
Oh, wow.
Even the judge that presided over his initial appearance in court when she asked if she could speak with her son, the judge declined. Can you believe that?
Mm.
He came out and he looked heinous, man. They beat him, so they beat that boy so bad, threw him through a glass plate window, the whole thing. But, hey, you know, they just say that Donnie and Ronnie make this stuff up, don't they?
Mm-hmm. That's what they usually say. And it turns out to be stuff. When they see it in the Star Tribune, you know, they don't call us and apologize. They just, oh, it was in the Star Tribune. But you heard it weeks ago.
That is absolutely correct. Brother Jordan down there, man, and at the NAACP in Rochester, the most powerful NAACP in the state of Minnesota, told them black folk in Albert Lee, said, we can't do nothing for you. But what else we got down? Like I said, those phone lines are open, brother. We got about nine more minutes.
Yeah, phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. Phone lines wide open. Give us a call. Yeah, this is kind of a sensitive one, Mr. Edwards. I don't think that the people in the queue, I mean, God bless their souls. I'm glad you listened to the show, program, and stick with us for as long as you have. But I don't think that they publicly want to go on record. And this recording of this program for podcast on iBlog Talk Radio is there for the long term. And
yes,
these are some sensitive issues that we bring up. The NAACP is a very it's happening. The same process as you stated, Mr. Edwards, and as the Dudley stated, is happening all across the country, and people are.
Did you realize what he said? 11 pages of branches that are involved in controversy relevant to elections and the denial of the right to vote. Wow. 11 pages.
Oh, yeah. And also, on MLK Day, there were protesters at in Colorado Springs. Citizens protested outside the local chapter of the NAACP on Martin Luther King Day, declaring that the organization has lost its relevancy and, as one sign read, deserves a failing grade in matters of civil rights.
And so, by the way, it was the Colorado Springs NAACP that was bombed by white supremacists just 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same
yeah.
NAACP that was bombed. And I'm telling you, Billy Bob and them have said from Idaho that they're sending a special, they've ordered their chapter in Faribault, Minnesota, to provide aid and comfort to law enforcement in Albert Lee. Now, what kind of country are we finding ourselves living in?
And they have, they have a picture here on this particular website in the Colorado Independent. It's all these independent folks, Mr. Edwards, promoting and producing, publishing, distributing this real news that's going on. And the major players are staying away. But I want to get one thing in here, too, that is concerning the local ethnic council. On yesterday, on the 20th, I received this email from the state human rights organization department here led by Commissioner Lindsay that there was going to be a meeting to discuss the ethnic councils. And I happened to call the telephone number, Mr. Edwards, on that particular email to talk to this PR person. I said, hey, you know, wouldn't it have been smarter to send this thing out to a broader group and make sure that you follow up? And her response was, I sent it to all the TV stations and radio stations and newspapers. Well, I had to return a response. I said, well, you know they don't publish nothing about no ethnic people in Minneapolis or St. Paul, the local mainstream media. I said, you have to reach a little bit higher than what you're doing. So I don't know
right.
what the outcome of the meeting was, Mr. Edwards, but these people at the state, especially the Human Rights Department with their 4 or 5 year backlog, really need to be looked at under a microscope and very critically in the next 30 days by everyone in the state of Minnesota because they represent the state, Minnesota State Human Rights, Department of Human Rights.
Well, I hope this, Mr. Allen. I hope that when the State Human Rights Department and all the rest of them go before the Minnesota legislature, I looked how quickly, and rightly so, this afternoon, the Minnesota legislature took up immediately legislation and passed legislation to deal with the problems of abuse in the homes and child protection. I hope that our two African American senators and our one African American representative in the House of Representatives, I hope they ask Kevin Lindsay, Mr. Allen, to update them on Albert Lee.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That'd be nice.
I hope that I keep hearing these conversations about the senators and et cetera. I just hope that they ask for an update, a status report on these events and civil rights environment in Albert Lee and Austin, Minnesota. Before we, you know, talk about some young African American found out in some cornfield with a bullet in his head. Oops. You know, I mean, I just hope they do that, Mr. Allen. I just think in the last 4 minutes that shouldn't be too much of a task, would you not think?
Yeah, that's not too much to ask. They should. I actually just sent a message to Governor Mark Dayton via Facebook, since he is my friend, to ask him what
the state is doing
to protect the safety of black Minnesotans in Albert Lee and Austin, Minnesota. Police are beating the crap out of black men. The second question is, what is the Minnesota Department of Human Rights doing to address this matter? And so I have Kevin Lindsay's personal email address, and I'm also going to ask him to and request him to appear on next week's program. So we'll see what happens.
I think that's excellent. And they can just kind of, but I can't let y'all to hook down, and because I'm taking the same position on the Council on Black Minnesotans. They have an office in Rochester. You know, they could have sent staff person down there. It is the talk of Southern Minnesota, what's happening in Austin and Albert Lee and et cetera. And it's frightening and it's chilling. And those folks down there, man, are down there by themselves. I mean, they feel just absolutely vulnerable. I mean, it's just and these police are brutal, man. They're brutal down there. They are extremely brutal. And I give you again for the fourth time two names, two officers, Miller and Hanson. Oh, they're a pair to work with, brother. By the way, the young man in question, just so folks don't come up with, they probably didn't know him. This young man had been going to school. He's 19 years old now, Don. He had been going to school in Albert Lee since his mother moved there, and that would have been since he was in the third grade.
Not good at all.
Well, Don, I think we've had an enlightened period of reflection. The opportunity will continue to be open for the Dudleys to come back on the program. I just think we want to be updated on what happens up there in Duluth, if you will, if anything. But I think that Claudel Washington. In fact, I'm going to call him Papa Doc because obviously he's become president for life. Claudel, man, president for life. And Sharon Witherspoon, geez, I hadn't heard Sharon's name in about a decade. Yeah, she's been a friend and companion of Claudia for, a long time, if you know what I mean. All right, Don, let James Brown take us home, man. Minnesota.
Thanks,
one of the places that's not the safest for African Americans.
Some people say we got a lot of malice, some say it's a lot of nerve. But I say we want to quit moving until we get what we deserve.